Hello and welcome to Crime Theories Off the Record, the podcast series where I talk about my interpretation of crime theories. This is your host, Karen. Hello everyone! Happy belated Women's Day! As I observe International Women's Day and try to support every person advocating for women's rights, I decided not to air an episode on such a day, to echo a day without a woman, but also to bring awareness to the protests around the world regarding policies that keep oppressing and murdering girls and women. Off the record, I also want to take a moment to remember the former U.S. Representative Pat Schroeder, a pioneer for women's and families' rights in Congress, who died Monday night at the age of 82. Schroeder was unapologetically herself. Her wits and antics for 24 years shook up the good old boys' club by forcing government institutions to acknowledge that women have a role in government. Shifting our focus back to today's episode, I will be covering John Braithwaite's theory of shaming and crime. But before I jump into this, I would like to remind everyone that I have done some research and have worked on the topic, but don't consider myself an expert in every aspect of my field. John Braithwaite is a distinguished professor at the Australian National University. As a criminologist, he is particularly interested in the role of restorative justice, shame management, and reintegration in crime prevention. His book, Crime, Shame, and Reintegration, 1989, demonstrated that current criminal justice practice tends to stigmatize offenders, making the crime problem worse. Braithwaite argues that restorative justice enables both offenders and citizens, by way of mediation, to repair the social harm caused by crime. Off the record, for those who are not familiar with the concept of restorative justice, it is an approach to justice where one of the responses to a crime is to organize a meeting between the victim and the offender, sometimes with representatives of the wider community. This concept has been practiced in Indigenous communities as the goal is for the victim and the offender to share their experience of what happened, to discuss who was harmed by the crime and how, and to create a consensus for what the offender can do to repair the harm from the offense. This may include a payment of money given from the offender to the victim, apologies and other amends, and other actions to compensate those affected and to prevent the offender from causing future harm. Now, focusing on his book, In Crime, Shame, and Reintegration, John Braithwaite took up the issue of the conditions under which societal reaction increases crime, as labeling theories contend, or decreases crime, as advocates of punishment predict. Legal violations evoke formal attempts by the state and informal efforts by community members to control the misconduct. Central to social control is what Braithwaite 1989 called shaming, which he defined as all processes of expressing disapproval which have the intention or effect of invoking remorse in the person being shamed and or condemnation by others who become aware of the shaming. Shaming comes in two varieties, reintegrative and disintegrative, and each has a different impact on recidivism. Consistent with labeling theory, Braithwaite 1989 argued that disintegrative shaming stigmatizes and excludes, thereby creating a class of outcasts. The offender not only is castigated for his or her wrongdoing, but also is branded as a criminal who is beyond forgiveness and unworthy of restoration to membership in the community. As labeling theory warns, the result is further entrenchment in crime. The offender is denied employment and other legitimate opportunities to bond with conventional society and, consequently, joins with other outcasts in creating and participating in criminal subcultures. But shaming also can be reintegrative. In these instances, an illegal act initially evokes community disapproval, but then is followed by attempts to reintegrate the offender back into the community of law-abiding or respectable citizens through words or gestures of forgiveness or ceremonies to certify the offender as deviant. Now, there is a stick and carrot approach in this manner. A stick approach uses punishment to push people towards a goal, as the carrot approach incentivizes good work with rewards. Hence, condemnation is followed by community responses. In this case, shaming has two faces. It makes certain that the inappropriateness of the misconduct is known to the offender and all observers, and it presents an opportunity to restore the offender to membership in the group. This combination, Braithwaite argued, reduces crime by exerting greater control over offenders and by not setting in motion the criminogenic processes caused by stigmatization and social exclusion. Braithwaite 1989 extended labeling theory not only by delineating types of shaming or societal reaction, but also by observing that the underlying social context determines that the degree to which shaming will be reintegrative or disintegrative. In communitarian societies such as Japan, individuals are densely enmeshed in interdependency, which have the special qualities of mutual help and trust. As might be expected in this context, shaming is reintegrative and produces low crime rates. Off the record, that's not the case in America. As a consequence, America lacks the cultural and institutional basis that could encourage seeing offenders as part of an interdependent community. The social control has a strong disintegrative quality. Lawbreakers are marked indelibly as ex-offenders and are provided with few avenues to reestablish full societal membership. This stigmatization creates a class of outcasts who individually turn to crime and who collectively develop criminal subcultures and illegal opportunity structures. The result, Brainwhite's claim, is that America is burdened with a high rate of lawlessness. In summary, Brainwhite enriched labeling theory by illuminating not only that shaming or labeling varies in its nature and effects, but also why this variation ultimately is contingent on the society in which shaming takes place. Now, the empirical adequacy of Brainwhite's contentions remains to be convincingly demonstrated. Brainwhite, Ahmed, and Brainwhite, 2006, have marshaled evidence from an array of quantitative and qualitative sources that are consistent with the theory, such as studies of parenting, corporate regulation, and restorative justice programs. Now, studies that employ surveys to measure integrative shaming and then assess its impact on self-reported delinquency, the methodological approach most often used to test criminological theories, are still in short supply. This research has yielded promising but mixed results, like many things. But one finding of potential consequence is that measure of reintegration and shaming tend to have main or independent effects on outcomes. As Braithwaite and colleagues have observed, the need to break down different elements of reintegrative shaming to see which are theoretically crucial and which are not should be an exciting challenge to criminologists in the survey research tradition. Now, if you're interested in learning more, join me for next week's episode on Sherman's Defiance Theory. Thank you for listening and choosing this podcast. This episode is brought to you by Anchor. Please rate, review, and subscribe on Spotify or whatever platform you're listening from. And don't forget to tune in for the next episode. Off the record, if you need help visualizing these theories, go check us up on Instagram at ct.offtherecord.